The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
I'm Melissa Lee, and this is Fast Money. Tonight's trader lineup, Guy Adami, Tim Seymour, Dan Nathan, and Karen Farnham. And tonight on Fast, the record rally taking a breather as we gear up for earnings season. The banks kick things off at the end of the week. We'll break down the key names you need to watch straight ahead. Plus, a crypto crash, Bitcoin falling 13% at one point today. And one analyst has a way to play it. He says this payment stock will thrive even if Bitcoin continues to dive. We'll bring you that name. And later, the chairwoman is taking the mound to pitch her next best idea, why Karen thinks this consumer stock is about to pack on some hefty gains. We start off with new fallout this hour to the growing social media crackdown on President Trump and his supporters. More big names joining the list of tech companies blocking or limiting Trump's accounts after last week's Capitol Hill riots. And now Facebook and Airbnb just announcing new measures ahead of the inauguration. Airbnb saying that it will ban guests associated with hate groups. Facebook saying that it will stop and take off all content with the hashtag #StopTheSteal. We saw Twitter fall disproportionately compared to its rivals, down by 6.5% by day's end. We had Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, come out saying that this is a problem if CEOs can determine, you know, who can speak, especially head of state. Guy Adami, is this a problem for Twitter?
I think it is. I mean, specifically Twitter, yes. And I think you mentioned it manifested itself in the way the stock traded today. But I also think it's a problem that Twitter will overcome, because I will still say it's too valuable a property. And I think I think it will get past this. The one that I'm most concerned about, and I've voiced some concern, whether justified or not, is Facebook. And if you look, Facebook's down 15% since its all-time high back, I think, on September 2nd. Not a particularly strong day today. I think earnings at the end of the month are going to be fantastic. I'm not suggesting they won't be. But again, I'll say the existential risk to Facebook, if it comes under the auspices of ESG investing, I think with each passing day, that seems to be more and more likely. And that's a thing as a Facebook shareholder, which I'm not, by the way, I would be very concerned about.
Let's get more on all the tech companies that are deciding to do this. Let's get to Deidre Bosa, who's done some reporting on this. Deidre.
Hey, Melissa, you outlined a few of the latest moves. Attention is essentially now turning to what tech is doing ahead of January 20th to prevent the chaos of last week that some critics say that they should have had a closer eye on to begin with over the last 4 years. Facebook, in a blog post, says that they are treating the next 2 weeks as a major civic event, and they will remove content containing the phrase "stop the steal." Airbnb, Melissa mentioned this too, expanding its trust and safety defense. That seven-step plan includes additional security checks and banning individuals that were identified as involved in criminal activity at the Capitol on January 6th. But really, what started with social media has progressed over the last few days to expand to payments and commerce companies, even the cloud providers that power the internet. Many Trump supporters have turned to Parler, an alternative social media platform that has drawn conservatives and far-right extremists. From January 6th to January 10th, the app was downloaded nearly a million times across Apple's App Store and Google Play, and that's more than 10 times the downloads that it generated across the prior 5 days. Today, however, the app went dark. Apple and Google pulled it from their app stores, and Amazon's AWS, its cloud unit, went a step further, essentially taking this app off the internet altogether by cutting off its cloud computing power, citing those violent posts. Now, tech also cutting off the president's and his supporters' money flow. Shopify and PayPal, they no longer sell Trump official merchandise, while payment startup Stripe cut off the president's campaign website and fundraising arms, which is, of course, a lucrative source of income. Now, the last few days, Melissa, represent Tech's most aggressive steps yet against the president and in their efforts to purge misleading content and accounts. So the next few weeks will certainly be a big test to see if some of the policies that they have put in place, at least this roadmap, is effective in reining in some of that misinformation and organization that led to last Wednesday. Back to you.
All right, Deirdre, thank you. Deirdre Boson, I think most Americans want technology to take these steps to prevent any further civil unrest. At the same time, this really begs the question, has tech really become too powerful if it is able to incite and be the source, so to speak, of this unrest in the first place, Tim Seymour? And that's what I was getting at in terms of the criticism, particularly that's coming from Europe about free speech and how it's problematic for free speech. Maybe in the U.S. it's not raising eyebrows, but certainly in Europe is. And Europe has been very, very out front in terms of regulating big tech.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for now. I mean, on some level, this censorship is something maybe a lot of people agree with, but now they're almost highlighting the power that these companies have to dictate the conversation. And that's something that as antitrust, anti-monopoly, dynamics are also coming down on these companies, it should only highlight the power that these companies have to dictate the course of the conversation, or so it seems, even though we've all said that the conversation needs to be regulated in some way. So this is the evolution of social media. There have been plenty of people that have said on some level, social media as we knew it will never exist again in the same way in this country. I agree with Guy in terms of I think Twitter is such a powerful platform for news that I think that that the format works, and I think it will continue to work. But I'm not going to tell you that this is going to be without pain for Twitter in the short term. I also think that this creates an opportunity for other platforms that may not be seen as volatile. But most importantly, look what advertisers are doing. Brand friendly and at least a brand friendly environment overall is what will probably win from an economic perspective.
Yeah. Dan, your thoughts? For so long, we've worried about regulation and the regulatory cloud hanging over tech, and it's never really come to fruition, just sort of hanging out there, waiting for the right. I mean, is this going to be the right time? Is this the time where regulation really becomes an issue for shareholders?
Yeah, I just think it's way too late. And when you think about it, so what are people complaining about right now that that private companies could censor a public figure? That's really what this argument is about. Yet Facebook has 2.7 billion monthly active users. That is one third of the people on this planet. When you think about the power that exists on that platform and the few people that run that company, how it was let to get this big and this powerful is another question. And you think about between 2016 election and the 2020 election, you bookend what has happened on these platforms over the last 4 or 5 years. We had foreign bad actors co-opt our election by manipulating these platforms. And this time around, we had a president manipulate these platforms to incite a riot. So we have no control over what's going on with these platforms. They have all the control. As far as giving any praise to these organizations doing what they're doing now, they're a little too late. They waited until people died. As it relates to Twitter, as far as I'm concerned, and I said this last week on the show, they added a lot of people in Q2. They didn't add barely anybody in Q3. You think it's going to get better this year than it was last year? We know why that stock sold off in late October after their Q3 report. I think Twitter is going to be in a world of hurt for a while. They are not growing the way that Facebook is. They are not monetizing the users. They don't have the scale that Facebook does. So, whether you like them or not, Facebook is still fine until the advertisers leave, until users leave, but Twitter's in a much worse situation, in my opinion.
Karen?
Well, it's a really fine line that they're trying to walk. But think about this, though. Another constituent that Twitter and Amazon are dealing with is their employees, right? And I think, from what I've read, I'm not sure if it's true, that it was really coming from pressure from the employees that made Amazon make the decision of shutting down Parler's AWS account. So I don't know how they solve that, they can't just completely ignore those constituents. We'll see what kind of regulation comes, but I do think the stocks are already under pressure because of the uncertainty around regulation, right? We've seen, I don't know how many lawsuits filed by attorneys general. We know that the government, both a bipartisan issue, if there are any left, is how do we rein them in? I think for some of them, the smaller ones, if there is a lot of regulation, it's going to be hard for them to comply. I don't even know who would be able to do that beside the very big ones. And I think ultimately, one day when there's certainty, they'll trade better. But that's so far from now that we have any certainty on what the regulations will be. I'm just going to try to ride it out. For me, I think Twitter has more downside. I wasn't surprised to see it open down 11% or so. And when it traded back up to down maybe, I don't know, $2 or $3 down only, I actually shorted some. I think in the near term, the news flow will be very bad for Twitter. But this is not a long-term short. You could actually, I'm wondering, could somebody, probably somebody right-wing media-oriented investors decide to try to buy Twitter? That's possible. I mean, it's $34 billion plus whatever premium. They don't. I don't see a blocking shareholder, I don't think. If I'm wrong, tweet me. Tell me that Jack could block a deal. But I don't know. I mean, it's such a crazy time. Could that happen? I guess, theoretically.
And suffer fate. Happens overnight. Suffer fate like Parler. I mean, the interesting company, I think, here for me is Amazon and Amazon Web Services guy, because Amazon Web Services, as a, you know, a cloud service, a hosting service, has decided that this site violates its terms of use. And so it has basically cut this site off, Parler, at the root. And the immense power that AWS has displayed almost begs for regulation, it seems.
Right. Yeah, no question about it. I mean, a lot of people calling for it, clearly. And the stock, I mean, you go back over the last 6 months, it's extraordinary how volatile Amazon has been. It's given you opportunities on both sides of the ledger. But I guess then the question back to you or the rest of the guys and gals comes, I mean, what are people more apt to give up? You know, their Amazon accounts, which, by the way, I don't even think I have one, or their Facebook accounts. I'll tell you flat out that if I never spend another day on Facebook, that'll be fine by me. And I'm sure a lot of people probably agree, whereby Amazon's become one of those things where it's now part of everyday life. So it's an interesting conversation in the context of what we try to do, figure out where stocks are going.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk more about the fallout from the social media crackdown on President Trump. Joining us now is Rich Greenfield, partner and co-founder of Lightshed Partners. Rich, great to have you with us. You've got a buy rating. You continue to have a buy rating on Twitter, and I'll just start the conversation off there. And so presumably you think that this is not a big deal for Twitter, that the looming threat of regulation is not a big deal for Twitter, even though an EU commissioner, a German chancellor, has come out and said basically that this is a problematic breach of the First Amendment. You don't think that regulation is a problem?
You know, look, I'd say that we see lots of forms of regulation or threats of regulation. But let's be clear. Look at how divided our government is. I mean, just look what happened in the elections, the main election, even the runoff last week. Our country is, you know, razor thin margin of, you know, in terms of kind of how we see major issues. The odds of sort of transformative legislation happening anytime in the next 12 months, probably in the next several years, is quite challenging. The only thing I know for sure is it's going to take a very, very long time to get to consensus on very complicated issues that I don't have the answer of. I just listening to you all debate. Nobody. These are very challenging questions. I mean, think about the fact that, you know, think about what we're talking about. If we change the topic and said instead of overtaking the Capitol, if it was about distributing child pornography, there's no doubt everyone would have a consensus view. It's good that, you know, it's good that Google takes it down. It's good that Facebook takes it down. It's good that Twitter takes it down. Is it a bright line red rule that, you know, overthrowing the government, in being the president willfully telling people to go overthrow the government, is that a bright line rule that should be kind of viewed the same way? That's clearly what, you know, is being done here, that there was a clear view that this is something that just cannot stand and they have to take action. We can debate whether it's okay, but I think you're going to see years of legislation probably go nowhere to try to get to the right answer on this.
Hey, Rich, it's Dan. Thanks for joining us. So if you listen to the conversation before, you know, we were talking about obviously the difference in scale between Facebook and Twitter. And one of the reasons why, you know, I just have to be pessimistic about Twitter here is before all this happened, sure, you know, in Q3, they only had 1 million net ads. I have to think they go X growth here when you consider the fact that Facebook's going to have $100 billion in sales next year, growing at
25%. But hold on, Dan. Let's just stop.
Yeah.
Remember that the only thing that's happening here is a political discussion. For everyone, you may be far right. You know, you could be QAnon. I don't care how far right you are in terms of your political views on these issues. You may be Trump's biggest fans. If you want to know what happened with the Golden State Warriors last night, or if you love Charli D'Amelio, she speaks to her fans on Twitter. I mean, yes, President Trump is now gone from Twitter. First of all, a lot of his supporters are still very much on Twitter because they want to be involved in the debate. And if you go to even a platform like Parler, the problem with Parler was it was only right-wing discussion, and there's not the broader conversation that happens every day on Twitter. I mean, politics is a small part. I mean, we're talking, you know, low teens percentage of total content on Twitter. Twitter's about entertainment. It's about, you know, sports. I mean, you want to know what happened in the game. Like, it is a critical source of information that goes so far beyond politics.
I'm on Twitter, yeah, just like you are. But what I'm saying is, listen for one second. What I'm saying here is that in Q3, they had 1 million net ads. And that was about as good as it got with all the sports coming back and everything. So take politics out of it. Take a guy who had 90 million followers and a bunch of cult followers on there. Even if you take that out, I'm not being political. I'm talking about the numbers here, and I'm talking about their advertising. So what I'm saying is it's not growing. It's growing at 15% a year at best in sales right now. That's what I'm saying.
Users have doubled over the last 2 years. There was clearly a pull-forward effect. I mean, we've seen pull-forward effects. I mean, look what Reed Hastings said for Netflix. The pandemic in Q2 certainly had a pull-forward effect from the rest of the year. I think there's no doubt about that. But if you think about what really drives Twitter, it's not just sports coming back. There's no doubt. But think about the return of just live events. I mean, so much in terms of product launches, events. I mean, as life gets back to normal, it may be more second half than first half, given what's unfortunately happening with the pandemic. But I think there's probably no better company position for the return of events. That's what Twitter was built for in terms of its ad spend. And look, the reality is, in terms of the future of Twitter, it probably has less to do with any form of specific content than monetizing its users better. It has now built a very substantial, as you point out, they had pretty incredible growth year over year throughout the first, you know, the first 9 months of 2020. What they need to do is monetize better. I mean, the flywheel that drives Facebook, it's not the big brands. I mean, what everyone gets wrong about Facebook is it's not the big companies. It's not the Coke. It's not the P&Gs. It's all of those small businesses all around the world that drive. I mean, Facebook has 10 million advertisers because of direct response advertising. Twitter is building that. They're slow. They're late. There's no doubt about it. That's what's hurt the stock, was the delay in their movement into performance advertising is what's hurt the stock coming out of October. But the reality is you're going to see that refreshed and a real new initiative around what they call MAP 2.0 in 2021. That's what investors should be focused on. They're having an analyst day, I believe, in February. I think that's what's going to really create increased momentum around this stock, is getting the advertising piece, because you're right. Monetizing users is all people are going to care about. They have enough users. Now it's about monetizing.
So we have 15, 20 seconds left, Rich. Bottom line for us, at the end of the day, these social platforms will feel no impact from what has gone on in Washington, D.C.?
You know, I would never say no impact. I mean, there's no doubt that people freaked out about sort of the near-term impact. But I think the reality is these are core parts of our daily lives. And I don't think, you know, you may be okay leaving Facebook. Most people are not okay leaving Instagram. Most people are not okay around the world leaving WhatsApp. It's very hard to get away. These platforms are a core part of life, whether we like it or not. And in some ways, these platforms are almost, you know, becoming equally important to the future of the world as the governments themselves and the regulators themselves. And that's a very difficult issue that's going to take years for regulators to figure out.
Rich, always great to get your thoughts. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
Rich Greenfield, Lightshed Partners. What does that say about our society if technology is becoming that powerful? Tim Seymour, do you agree that at the end of the day, there is very little impact? There will be very little impact on these social media platforms?
Well, I personally first off, agree that regulators around the world, and we've talked a lot about what's going on in China. I don't think this is an attack on Jack Ma as much as it is regulators having to get a hold of you know, major financial platforms and social media and e-commerce in China as well. And obviously China, where the state is involved in every transaction. But back to these companies, Rich also mentioned the ad spend. I think there are going to be winners and losers in terms of where advertisers feel there is a more brand friendly. And clearly, you know, following Snap and following that chart and also following, you know, their ability to maybe stand out of the way of some of this, I think is clear. Guys, Pinterest is another place where I think it's a less controversial place for advertisers. Again, it's not for all advertisers, but I do think there is a case here. We've Guy also brings up the ESG component of where Facebook's probably got some targets on its back. But as much as I've been critical, cynical about Facebook, I do think that right now, unless you take it apart, and where I think the sum of the parts might be worth more than it is right now, I think it's going to be very difficult to change the story there.
All right. Coming up, banking on Walmart, the big news that got this stock moving higher in the after hours. What is it and how traders are playing it? But first, shares of Eli Lilly getting a shot in the arm today. We'll tell you the headline that sent the stock surging when Fast Money returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. Saving, researching, investing. Now you can take those investments to the next level with Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today. I have an investment account with Schwab and a 401k with Fidelity, and I use Yahoo Finance to consolidate them, so it's incredibly easy to manage. They've been helping great investors like you for over 25 years. So whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking to level up, Yahoo Finance can simplify things, putting all your tools and data in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a 360-degree look at the financial news cycle, from breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, and customizable charts. They've got you covered. You can see all of your 401k and other investments by securely linking your brokerage accounts. Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you see your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective helps smart investors become even better. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor. YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. That's YahooFinance.com.
Breaking news out of the White House. Kayla Tosh has got the details. Kayla.
Well, Melissa, Acting Secretary of Homeland Security Chad Wolf has just released a letter to colleagues at the agency saying that he will be stepping down from his post early due to recent events, which he says include recent meritless court rulings regarding the validity of his authority to lead the agency. It is perhaps not a surprising departure because we had expected that there could be more cabinet-level resignations in the wake of the siege on the Capitol last Wednesday, but it is particularly interesting timing for Wolf to be one that is departing, especially as there are still incitements to violence across the country. There are FBI field offices and law enforcement that are preparing for potential armed protests at state houses around the country. And it is a time where the security of the homeland is still continually under threat. It also, Melissa, comes as President Trump is expected to make a trip to the U.S.-Mexico border tomorrow. That is normally a trip that someone like the acting secretary would have made with the president, appeared in photo ops alongside him. But clearly, because Wolf is stepping down from his post leading the agency and ceding the reins to the FEMA administrator, he will not be in that role and he will not be serving the administration until January 20th. Melissa?
Kayla, thank you. Kayla Tausche. Let's check out shares of Eli Lilly topping the tape today, rising nearly 12% on some promising results from its Alzheimer's drug. Meg Terrell's got the details. Meg.
Hey, Melissa. Well, these results were a surprise. This is a drug that's in phase two, relatively small study, looking at early symptomatic Alzheimer's disease. And what they found was that this drug helped slow the declines in cognition and function that you see with this Alzheimer's disease by 32% versus placebo. Now, this is a drug that goes after those amyloid beta plaques in the brain, the same approach we've seen the industry take over and over to no success. And we should note that this is probably years from proving out to actually work and really get through the FDA if it does prove out in bigger trials, but clearly providing a lot of hope here today for the market anyway. You also are seeing shares of Biogen getting buoyed on this news because they are up at the FDA with their Alzheimer's Alzheimer's drug up 6% today, expecting a decision on aducanumab by March. And that drug has the same mechanism of action, not identical, but also going after amyloid plaques, Mel. So that was one of the big news stories really out of the J.P. Morgan conference today. We're going to have Eli Lilly CEO Dave Ricks on with us tomorrow morning, talk all about this and their efforts in COVID and other parts of their business, along with Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla coming up in the 8 a.m. Big guests throughout the day tomorrow. Mel?
We've been through this before, Megan, specifically with Alzheimer's drugs and early data. But the bottom line here is that there needs to be a much bigger trial to confirm this.
There does. Yeah, I was talking with some experts and they were estimating maybe 4 to 5 years before we figure out if this works. You know, aducanumab from Biogen has been a multi-year effort. And that's why, in addition to the burden of the disease, it's so heartbreaking to finally see these not work. So you have to cross your fingers that this one will work, but it will take some time to prove.
All right. Meg, thank you. Meg Terrell. Guy Dami, I know you follow this company very closely. We've seen this before. We've been on this roller coaster. What would you do if you were in Eli Lilly with a 12% gain in one day on this one early stage drug result? 272 patients were in this particular trial. What would you do?
Are you a fan of the Steve Miller Band by any chance?
I've heard of him from you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a lousy song. There's a lot of reasons to like Steve Miller, and this is one of their worst songs, but I would take the money and run here just on the back of the fact that it's up 10%, huge volume day traded, I think, almost 4 times normal volume, and you're coming into earnings, I believe, on the 29th of January. Not to say that I don't still like Eli Lilly. We've been steadfast on Lilly for quite some time. But when you have a move of this magnitude with this kind of volume on something that's in phase two and, to Meg's point, is probably not going to come to fruition for 3 or 4 years from now, I think the market just gave you a gift, Mel.
All right. That CEO interview tomorrow should be a good one. David Ricks. We've got a lot more ahead here on Fast Money. Here's what's coming up next.
All eyes on earnings as we count down to the first big reports of the year. And it could be a big one. We'll talk to one top strategist about why he thinks we're in for a wave of good news. And later, Bitcoin could boom or bust. But there's one company that could get a boost either way. We'll tell you what it is and how it can help you play the crypto craze. We've got that and a lot more when Fast Money returns.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks are retreating from record highs today, but the real moment of truth of the market may come later this week when big banks kick off earnings season. JP Morgan, Citi, Wells Fargo on tap with Q4 results, and our next guest predicts earnings season will exceed expectations. Jonathan Golub is a chief U.S. equity strategist, head of quantitative research at Credit Suisse. Jonathan, great to have you with us.
Good to be here.
You think the reopening is going to be much, much stronger than everybody thinks, and that earnings are going to be great, guidance is going to be great. Isn't that what the month of December was all about, though, when the S&P 500 went up about 100 points?
I think some of that is. I think that the market is anticipating another fantastic earnings season, and the market is probably discounting that. I don't think the market is discounting the surge of economic activity that's going to happen once everybody gets this vaccine and everybody gets these dollars in their pocket and starts spending money. So I think there's a lot more good news ahead.
So in terms of the markets not estimating that in terms of the vaccine, I mean, are companies going to go out on that limb and say, you know what, we think the vaccine's going to come, we think it's going to be distributed, and we think economic activity is going to be stronger than we think, and so therefore we're going to raise our guidance. Our guidance is going to be strong. I mean, it takes that next step, right, of company confidence to go out there if we're going to expect guidance to be good coming out of this earnings season.
You know, I think that there's this feet dragging that's going on by everyone. I mean, listen, there's no such thing as a model, whether it's an analyst or a strategist or an economist, that can tell you what this is going to look like. And when you don't have a frame of reference, you play it safe and you put your numbers in a little bit lower. So even if companies tell you that they're looking for a really big second half to 2021, whatever they tell you is going to, on average, be too low. The same thing for stock analysts. And that's why earnings revisions in the last, you know, couple of months have been fantastic. Analysts keep adjusting their estimates higher as they get more news. That's why earnings season is going to be higher. And that's why I think the whole year is going to end up with more positive moves on earnings.
Jonathan, it's Karen. Thanks for coming on. Let me just ask you, as the economy heats up again, are you afraid at all about inflation and whether that could ultimately hamstring the Fed?
Yeah, Karen, I think that's going to be the big conversation we're going to have. I just don't think we're going to have it until probably the end of this calendar year. But here's what's going to happen. This thing is going to open up and people are going to have more money in their pockets. And this economy is going to beat economic expectations. And you're going to start to see inflation, not because of wages going up, which is a normal way, but you're going to see shortages. You're going to see demand for products and supply chains opening up that are not going to be able to meet the needs. And inflation's going to spike up on us. The thing, the Fed knows that that's not the kind of sustained long-term inflation that they normally focus on. And they're going to let it run a little bit hot. But I'll promise you that if you have me back here next January, we're all going to be saying that the Fed is behind the curve, that they in fact left policy too stimulative. And the same thing with all this money we're putting in people's hands. So great news for now. And in a year from now, we'll debate whether there was too much of this or not.
Jonathan, great to see you. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Jonathan Golub, he's got a $4,200 S&P target. Favorite sectors, financials, healthcare, also likes the energy, industrials. We started off talking about the banks. So, Karen, I'll go back to you as a bank shareholder. What are you expecting in terms of guidance? What are we expecting from the banks? Because there are high expectations given the six-month chart here.
Right. There are high expectations, but I think that the net interest margin spread, that's what everyone's excited about as the yield curve gets steeper. But I think we're not even going to really fully see those effects because going into the fourth quarter, the 10-year was at 66 basis points. And now it's at 14, 15. So we're not even going to get to see the full NIM spread expansion. So maybe the headline's a little disappointing, but when you hear the commentary, that's going to be really important and what they're seeing in the economy. And of course, credit quality. But I'm optimistic. I'm long banks.
Our friend Mohammed El Arian had tweeted earlier today, 20 basis points of steepening in the curve in the first five trading sessions of the year, which is absolutely remarkable. Guy Adami, will we see that in any way, shape or form in bank guidance?
And the guidance, it's interesting if they'll speak to that. My sense is they will. So obviously that's a positive, as Karen just mentioned. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Think about how quickly it's happened. And again, the move in rates has been staggering. 10-year yields have more than doubled, I think, over the last 6 months, which is, I think, concerning. And if they continue to move at this pace, what is clearly a positive right now is quickly going to turn into a negative. With that said, quickly, if you're looking for a place to figure out where these stocks are going, you know, when J.P. Morgan tells you what their tangible book is, which they will when they release, I think you'd put a 1.8 multiple on that, and that's where the stock is headed.
All right. Coming up, EV maker NIO revving up to all-time highs today. We spotted a trade that suggests gains are only accelerating from here. We'll bring it to you. But first, the chairwoman is winding up her fast pitch. Why Karen thinks this stock could see sizable gains thanks to your New Year's resolution. That name when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks in the red today, but our Karen Feinerman says there is one name that could see some major gains as the new year gets underway. She's stepping up to the plate with her fast pitch. Karen, take it away.
Yes, so my fast pitch is WW International, and you might not know it by that name, but you do know it by its old name, which is Weight Watchers. So there's a lot of reasons I like it, but first let's go to valuation, which is where I always start. So the PE multiple here is 14-ish on this year's, but it's actually closer to 11 for next year's earnings, which for a brand as valuable as this is just way too cheap. And I know they have debt, but they've been paying it down and they've done a great job with their balance sheet. Second, this is the most important part. The acceleration of their switch to digital. That started when COVID started. So they've had to make that shift really, really quickly, and they've done a very good job doing it. And even though they are losing subscribers who are in the studio subscription model, they gained a lot of subscribers who are digital only. And the thing about a digital subscriber is it is so much more valuable than a studio subscriber. So even though they lost subscribers in studio and they gained some in digital, they were able to increase their gross margin, get their expenses under control, and increase their operating margin. That is really significant. That's a very important part of the story. And the last thing, the total addressable market, the TAM. That is the acronym for our era right now. And in this case, the TAM expanded, literally. People in America all over are gaining weight. I can tell you, I can eat a lot more calories in 45 minutes just snacking while I'm bored than I can burn off on my Peloton doing a Jen Sherman class. But I don't mean to be glib. I know there are a lot of people in America who don't have enough food, and my family foundation has made a donation to try to help that. But back to Weight Watchers, they've also expanded their business. It's not just about weight loss. It's also about fitness. It's about wellness. It's about sleep. And they added a great new brand ambassador, James Corden, who I think is excellent. And of course, they still have Oprah. So you put all those things together, and I think this stock is just way too cheap here. And I've been buying it since 21 began, only this year.
And they've got Oprah through 2025. Because they just re-signed the relationship with Oprah. Tim, you got a question?
Yeah, I buy anything James Corden selling. But Karen, what's more important, digital or secular to this story?
Digital. Digital is going to drive this story.
All right. No more questions. Sign a vote. Are you buying Karen's pitch on Weight Watchers? Guy Dami, we'll start with you.
Could you read my smart board for me? Because I wrote this prior to. Can you
Oprah.
Read that, please?
Exclamation
yeah, it says Oprah
point.
With an exclamation point. I mean, she's the greatest activist investor of all time. Remember when she said she was involved, where that stock went? You know, another foray into the world of Oprah, and that stock doubles from here. Good for Karen.
It's up 450% since Oprah's initial investment back in 2015. It's remarkable. Dan Nathan, what do you say?
Yeah, I'm a buyer. I thought that was a great power pitch. She covered so many different areas. And Karen is a great value investor, too, not just Oprah as the activist investor.
Tim?
Clean sweep. That's a big person with a big addressable market. That's the story here. I think that's what makes Weight Watchers exciting. Lifestyle wellness. That's the story.
All right. Traders have voted. It's your turn to vote out there. Are you buying Karen's fast pitch on WW? Head to our Twitter poll at CNBC Fast Money to vote. We've got the results later in the show. Up next, Bitcoin having a bad day, but our next guest has a way to play the weakness. Why he says this payment stock is the real winner here. We'll bring you the trade when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Walmart shares jumping in the after hours as the retailer announces a new fintech startup. Kate Rooney's got the details. Hey, Kate.
Hey, Melissa. Walmart is launching a new standalone fintech company. The retail giant is partnering with venture capital firm Ribbit to develop what they call modern and affordable financial solutions. This is going to be a separate company that's majority owned by Walmart with financial products for employees and for customers. Walmart's CFO and U.S. CEO will sit on that company's board. And Walmart says that they'll bring on more independent industry experts. They may also acquire or partner with some other fintechs. No word yet on exactly when that will launch and what it's going to look like, whether it's more banking products or payments. Walmart's partner here, we should say, Ribbit Capital, is one of the best-known VCs in financial technology. Its current portfolio includes Robinhood and Credit Karma, as well as a firm which is expected to go public this week. Melissa, back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Kate Rooney. Dan Nathan, you know, we looked at Walmart in very different ways since there was that report that it was interested in buying, in part, TikTok. And now look at it. It's in fintech.
Yeah, well, fintech makes a lot more sense than TikTok as far as I'm concerned. When you think about their customer base, you think about how they may not be adequately served by existing financial institutions. With Walmart's reach, it gives them a great opportunity partnering with a fintech investment firm like Ribbit. I mean, it seems like a home run, just optionality to me.
All right, let's move on. Bitcoin plunging 7% today despite its epic rally over the past 2 months. Our next guest says if the cryptocurrency flies or dives, Square will still thrive. Let's bring in Dan Dolev, the analyst over at Mizuho, with this call. Dan, great to have you with us.
Thank you, Melissa. Always a pleasure being here.
How does that work? Because you're estimating that if Bitcoin reaches $100,000 a coin by year end, gross profits could be up 9 times. This is a gross profits for the Cash App. But if it's 10,000 by year end, it could still double. How does that math work?
Exactly. So we did some work. We looked all the way back to 2017. And what we found out is that the revenue from Bitcoin for Square continues to go up, even in periods where Bitcoin actually doesn't go up, right? So right now we've had a rally, a massive rally since December or even November. So that's easy to think about Bitcoin going to 100,000. But historically, even in periods where it was going down, the gross profit from Bitcoin has been going up. And the reason for that is twofold. One, there's more users actually using or trading Bitcoin on the Cash App. And two, the number of transactions per user is going up. So what we've said in the note is that even if Bitcoin goes up to, you know, 100,000 or stays at, you know, 30,000 or 10,000, Square will still benefit from it.
Do the dynamics change if the people who are on the Cash App trading, quote unquote, trading Bitcoin actually don't trade as much and they simply hold as Bitcoin goes higher or lower for that matter?
Obviously. So it has to do with the engagement that's mm-hmm. going up because of the Bitcoin volatility. So as Bitcoin stays very volatile, I actually think it boosts engagement. So if Bitcoin just stays at a certain price and does not move, that wouldn't be as good for the engagement on the app, not just Square, but pretty much everyone else that's offering, you know, Bitcoin trading.
Right. You've done work also on PayPal and its relationship to Bitcoin. Do you see the same sorts of trends, or is PayPal more vulnerable to the volatility of Bitcoin?
No, absolutely. We're seeing the exact same trends on PayPal. The only difference between PayPal and Square is that PayPal's offering just started in November. What we saw in November is that nearly 20% of the user base has already started trading 2 weeks out of the gate. So I would imagine this number is much bigger now. I would expect the exact same trends to work for PayPal, with the one difference is that Square's offering is much more broad-based, which means that the engagement on the Cash App, right, we're talking about the Cash App, the engagement on the Cash App has much more meaning to other products like stock trading, you know, like P2P, mm-hmm. which is on the PayPal app, or Venmo, it's still yet more limited right now, but they're working on it, and you should expect more and more products to come there as well.
Dan, thank you.
You're welcome.
Dan Dolev of Mizuho. Guy Dami, simple question, PayPal or Square?
Yeah, I think, honestly, PayPal, I think. I probably would have given you a different answer 2 weeks ago, but Square traded up to 246, I think, on December 22nd, just did it again on January 8th. So short-term double top at these levels, PayPal over Square, Mel.
Same to you, Tim.
It'd probably be Square. I hate the price. I hate the valuation, but it's a would you rather. I have to give you an answer. I do think the Cash App, the stickiness, the cross-selling. Square clearly has not only an ecosystem, but a very loyal following, and their ability to monetize this group is proven. It does seem to be overly hinged to Bitcoin pricing right now.
All right. Coming up, NEO shares charging higher. Options traders are betting on an even more electric rally, if that's possible. The trade next. And what is the skinny on Karen's pitch? Head to our Twitter poll at CNBC Fast Money and vote. Let us know your take on WW. The results when Fast Money comes back. Big interview on deck tomorrow. GM CEO Mary Barra joining Phil LeBeau exclusively. Be sure to catch at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time here on CNBC. Let's stick with autos. NIO zooming to record highs after the EV maker announced plans for a new sedan. Wall Street loving the news. You can read about it on our website, cnbc.com/pro. In the meantime, let's bring in Bono and Eisen. He spotted some interesting activity in the options market. Bono, and what'd you see?
Yeah, thanks, Mel. So yeah, the EV momentum continues for sure. So taking a look at NIO, you can see that calls outpace puts 3-1. And if you jump forward and look at the implied vol, you can see that options are implying about 11% move in either direction between now and Friday. And the trade that really jumped out to me, about 85,000 of the Jan 15th weekly, 65 weekly calls traded, about 310, placing your break even at 68.10 or about 109% of current spot. I personally like selling an upside call against this given the implied vol move, but bullish momentum nonetheless in NIO.
NIO is one of those stocks that has really benefited from this whole retail trading wave, Guy, and this enthusiasm surrounding EVs in general. Why are you laughing?
No, because I love the Bee icebreaker. A lot of things are funny. There are many things that are funny. It's funny when Alabama wins by 28 tonight. It's funny. Just a lot of things are funny. What else is funny is the fact that K-Fine in 09 pitched the Weight Watchers or whatever they call themselves now, and the stock's up 10% in the after hours, and this is not a small company. So, I mean, she's got the Midas touch. Back to you.
No comment on NIO. Okay, we'll take that. Bonawin, always good to see you. Bonawin Eisen.
My pleasure.
For more options action, be sure to tune into the full show Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Coming up, time is running out. Head on over to our Twitter poll at CNBC Fast Money to vote for Karen's pitch on WW. Apparently, lots of people are buying into this, literally. The results right after this quick break. Are you all buying Karen's pitch on WW International? Apparently, yes, by a slim margin, 50.1%. In the after hours, it's up 11%. Wow. So maybe that's the true arbiter of the pitch, Karen, of 10%. Time for the final trade.
That's how divided we are.
Let's go around the horn. Guy Dami.
Halliburton in the earnings on the 19th.
Caught you off guard, didn't I? Tim Seymour.
You did.
Yeah, I'd say the move in energy stocks overall has been girthy. EOG is one of the best of breed alternative players in the U.S.
Karen Feinerman.
Yeah, so I have to go with my fast pitch. I like Weight Watchers, WW.
Dan Nathan.
Yeah, I like Karen's pitch too, but Twitter, if you see it over 50 in the next couple days, it'd be a seller.
All right. Thank you all for watching Fast Money. See you back here tomorrow at 5. Meantime, Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.